Recording in progress.
Okay, I've got 9:05. We'll go ahead and call this regular meeting of the Coryell County Commissioners Court to order at this time, noting that all members of the court are present. For those of you that are here in person, if you've got an electronic device, we would ask that you place it on silence at this time. And for those of you participating by Zoom, we would ask that you place your device on mute until such time that you'd need to address the court. We'll begin this morning with a word of prayer. Our most gracious Heavenly Father, we come before you humbled in your sight and asking for the forgiveness of our sins. Lord, we're so thankful to be able to gather here in a peaceful manner. And we ask that you watch over this court, guide us. And we ask that you place your hand of protection on the first responders here on earth as they protect us, as you watch over us from heaven. Lord, we continue to ask for fair weather and rains for this area of the country. Lord, we ask that guide us and direct us so that we can do here on earth what honors you in heaven. We ask all these things humbly in your son's holy name. Amen. And the pledges to our flags. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible. The next item on our agenda is the public. Citizens may address the court on any matter other than matters concerning county personnel or matters under litigation. Each citizen will be allocated 5 minutes with a total time not to exceed 30 minutes. Is there anyone here in person that would like to address the court this morning? Seeing and hearing none, is there anyone participating by Zoom that would like to address the court this morning? Seeing and hearing none, we'll move on to item number 5 on the agenda, which is the consent agenda. Noting that there are 3 items there, the court can consider to approve the consent agenda as presented, or you may choose to select any of those to be discussed individually.
Make a motion to accept consent agenda A, B, and C.
We got a motion to approve the consent agenda from Commissioner Basham, a second from Commissioner Taylor. Any further discussion on item number 5? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it. Motion carries. Item number 6 on the agenda is the road and bridge report. There he is. Mr. Latham, you're up.
Well, not much report on the judge. Second part of the month. He's been prepping a few roads through pre-sale. We're at about 7 miles ready here in about 2 weeks. Got 344, a little bit of 342 at the intersection. And we're going to reseal 343 or seal some of 343 while we were sitting there. Other than that, work orders are down, sitting at about 17 in queue right now. Okay.
All right, very good. Any questions or comments for Mr. Latham?
I have none, good.
All right, very good. Thank you, Mr. Layton. would like to move one item up on the agenda. There's another appointment that he needs to get to. So in the effort of trying to work with him, we will move to item number 16, which is to consider a burn ban. Commissioner Matthews had asked to have this on the agenda.
Yes, I asked for this to be on the agenda. I know that a lot of the fire departments right now, especially due to the wind and the lack of moisture in Coryell County, is a potential problem. I know they've been chasing the fires. I know Yvette has. I know Gatesville has. And visited with Chief Braden, and they've met with all the fire departments, and they're recommending a burn ban. That's why I asked for it to be on.
Mr. Hayden.
Well, you know, I would be sitting here lying to you if I told you we was having some catastrophic fires, because we're not. But we have had, just Gatesville, 17 grass fires since beginning of March. And a lot of it's due to people burning and not taking the right precaution. And with the wind blowing, and there's one of the problems with the winds. So today the wind blows. Tomorrow the wind doesn't blow, so everybody wants to burn it more. But the next day the wind does blow, and the next day the wind does blow. Now we got ashes, embers scattered everywhere, and that's starting fires. So to me, this year has started off pretty close to what 2011 was. And I don't know how many of you remember 2011, but I can remember it well. You know, we just ran in 2011. And it started off like this. It was, we had a little rain, and then we had no rain, and then we had no rain, and then it was just completely dry up through August, or actually up through October. And so our recommendation to put it on now is just to prevent a large fire, because it's getting drier every day. You look at some of the, even the bar ditches look pretty good to me, but when you get out and look at the pastures, they're really dry. And I now talk to a lot of people in the Cove area and out towards the Evan area. That's where it's probably the driest thing. And the KBDI out there, you know, pretty, wrote the KBDI of them. Our high is 573, and that's what the western part of the county looked like at the map. All the counties around us, except Hamilton and McClellan County, are under the burn, and they all have lower KBDIs than we do, except Lampasas County. They're 7 points higher than us. And so we're at an average of 382, but the KBDI, when it gets to 575, it's critical. And that means the ground is completely dry. So the KBI is, if you'll leave free from the Texas Forest Service, it's a good indication that there is some moisture out there, but it's not a deciding factor of where you should have a burn ban or not. The higher it gets, of course, the more readily stuff will burn. But right now, you know, only probably in the western part of the county are we really hurting. Got around Copper's Cove there. Gary tells me they're pretty dry over there. So, unfortunately, we can't put the burn ban on for everything, you know, west of the Leon River or wherever you want to say it. You know, we can't do that. So, the burn ban's been off for a very long time, and I was going to try to figure out how long, but I never did. So, I don't know if it's been in the months. People should have had time to do most of burning. I know they haven't, because every time you put one on, well, I just got to finish up. You know, it's just an excuse. But I just feel like this is a protection for the county and for us, the fire departments, have to fight. It's just getting us a jump on everything. And all our neighbors, especially to the west, a little bit, let's see, what would be Comanche up in there. They're all under a burn ban, and they all have lower average KBDIs than we did. So we just feel like it's time. And, you know, and I don't know about everybody's territory, but I polled every fire chief individually to see what he thought. And they all recommended, they thought it was time we started to burn that. So that's our recommendation. I'll answer any questions I can about it. And I do have, you can go on to Texas Forest Service and that's a map of all the burn bans. The red is the burn bans of Texas. And there are, yesterday afternoon, 147 counties under burn ban. Out of what, 254? 254. It's been a long time since I've been over the link. So over half, 50% of the states are under burn ban. So I'll leave it up to y'all. Thank you, Jeff.
You bet. Mr. Vaden, out of the 17 fires that Gatesville's responded to, how many of those were on days where the winds were above 23 miles an hour?
Not very many. I'd have to go back and look, Judge, but I didn't look that up. I just don't know. Most of them have been on days that we could burn, that you people could legally burn. We haven't had too many illegal burns. And the most of the illegal burns we've had, we've caught them. The deputies out on patrol catch them pretty early, and we get out there and stop them before they get out of hand. So most of these are from days they could legally burn or the day after when the winds get back up. But I don't think we've had too many that was just I have to ask the sheriff's office. I don't think there's been too many citations and that I know.
Okay.
It's all been pretty calm.
And then looking at our weather forecast for the next 10 days going out, and I pulled that off of weather.com for this morning. There is not a predicted day. On Thursday, April 3rd, is the highest with winds of 16 miles an hour. Everything else between now and April 8th is below that. The state statute defines the legal burn being when the winds are greater than 6 miles an hour and less than 23. So if you were burning outside of those parameters, you're violating a state statute. So there are control measures within that. And as Mr. Vaden said, our current KBDI as of yesterday was 461 countywide. You get into the red, according to their graph, you start getting into the orangish red when you get above 500. So currently, if you look at the map, most of Coryell County is in the yellow band with 461, and there are portions in the north and east of the county, which is green, which is a moisture index of less than 300. And then, of course, the mean, as he said, was 380, 381, something along those lines. So with that, there are state statutes that are already in place. I do believe that it is prudent to protect our emergency service resources, and I've stated that before. But I also believe that it's a landowner's right to be able to burn as long as they're burning responsibly. I don't think that there's anything that we can put in place that fixes irresponsibility. So given that the weather forecast coming up does not call for extremely high winds, that our moisture is up, and I know that there are certain areas of the county that are in a drier condition than other parts. And we do have the ability, this court does have the ability to put burn bans on through geographic areas. I mean, historically, we have not done that. We've just done it countywide. But if we're to the point where we need to address certain areas rather than all areas, I think that's a conversation worth having.
Where would you draw a line? I've been out on something like in 2011 he was talking about. And I think that the 30-day ban would be good, at least get us through the middle of April, where the winds usually die down. And it's miserable. I mean, I've been on some of the big ones that he's talking about, and you know, you're risking, on a big fire, you're risking probably at least 100 lives just so somebody can burn their brush. I mean, I've got 80 acres I need to burn right now, but I'm not. I just, I think we need to put one on for at least 30 days to get us through mid-April and kind of see what the weather's doing then. Because a lot of the fires that he's talking about, if they burn on legal days and they're big brush fires, well, they're still burning for 3 days. And you get a 60-mile-an-hour wind come through, and then you burn half your neighbor's country up. I would make the motion to put the 30-day burn ban on.
All right, there's a motion and a second for a 30-day burn ban. Since we do not have an order to consider, and ask for some clarification, is that based off of our standard order format that we have used historically? Okay, no modifications to that other than we're setting it at 30 days.
I mean, if we get 4 inches of rain, yeah, we
can lift it.
We can lift it, but I'm not seeing any of the weather I've looked at for the next 30 days. This week they're maybe giving us a quarter to a half an inch. So if wind blows 15 miles an hour, that's going to be burned up in about 48 hours.
Well, again, and I'm just going off of one weather report.
Yeah.
It says that Thursday and Friday, 54 and 67% chance of showers.
Yeah, and they also put on there 2/10 to half an inch.
And they're also wrong 50% of the time.
We can always lift it. Like I say, if something, a hurricane blows in or something, we get 4 to 6 inches of rain, then we lift it. Ain't no big deal. But I think it's justifiable in my mind to put it on countywide.
Judge, do you not have the authority to lift it?
Absolutely, I do. I can suspend the burn ban. And again, I've said my piece because I believe that even though we have had some fires, I think there are statutes that can be enforced that reiterate when you can and cannot burn, but that falls in the law enforcement and prosecution side of things. But as we have a motion and a second on the floor, is there any further discussion?
I know we have a motion and a second. But you know, there's academia, there's looking at reports, there's looking at weather reports, then you got to listen to your experts. And we got the main fire chief here, and he's canvassed all his other fire chiefs. They're the ones that put their lives at risk every time they go out to fight fires. I'm going to listen to them at the end of the day versus a weather report versus a KBDI, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to listen to the fire folks. And it may not be popular, and there might be a few people that want to burn their brush pile. But at the end of the day, I think our job is to protect our firefighters and lessen the burden, on our county expenditures. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. We will move, we'll pick back up with item number 7 on the agenda, which is to consider proclamation 2025-01, National Crime Victims Rights Week. That proclamation went out in your packet. And that was submitted through the district attorney's office to recognize April 6th through the 12th as National Crime Victim Rights Week.
Make a motion to approve Port Hope County Proclamation 2025-01.
Second.
Got a motion to approve from Commissioner Matthews, second from Commissioner Taylor. Any further discussion on item number 7? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 8 is update and actions on grants to include SS4A, HMP, RCP, CDBG MIT, and DR4781, which is our FEMA disaster from last spring. I don't believe there's any changes on the SS4A. I will tell you that the SITCOG regional plan, I believe at this point, has been finalized. Or final draft, they should be getting it approved and submitted to U.S. Or the federal transportation folks for their approval. And again, our piece of that is integrated with that whole big regional plan. The hazard mitigation plan, I believe we're still working on documents to close that out to get reimbursement funds on that. The RCP, I have started working on incorporating the comments that we've had from a couple of workshops into a new draft of the subdivision regulations, and I should have that out to y'all within the week.
Hate to interrupt, but it does have to do with RCP. Myself and Mr. Mannix did meet with MRB engineering, getting some language for the subdivision rule book that should help us out. You know, it coming directly from an engineer. The proper language. We had a very good meeting. A lot of it is that list that we've gone over already. But we met with him last Thursday. And he's working on it. So we should have that language back here pretty quick. So what we need to put in the subdivision regs for, you know, all the legalities. Thank you.
If you want it incorporated in my draft, I would encourage you to pass that along to me.
He's working on it, Judge.
Okay.
I hope that time to put it in your draft.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Anything else on RCP? The Community Developed Block Grant, CDBG MIT. I believe the last on that was we were supposed to be given notification mid-March. And so I'm assuming we're still in mid-March, because I don't believe we've received notification on that. Have we, Mr. Bell?
No, sir. They sent another email the other day to touch base with them on we haven't heard from them yet. And every time they question them, they turn around and say to you,
hey, okay.
That says pretty much the same thing as the time before. The last one, I guess, came out on March 14th. And it says, for DLO received an inquiry below regarding the status. Says during the final stages of quality assurance, the GLO required additional review for the affirmatively furthering fair housing RFI response. We have concluded that no additional information is needed at this time and will continue to push the application through the final stages of quality assurance. While we do not have an exact timeline for approval, we anticipate news about this application to be released within the next 30 days, pending any unforeseen circumstances. Best regards. That's the latest.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mr. Bell. Anything else on CDBG MIT? And finally, DR 4781. We had I received an email yesterday on some documents that I need to go in and review and approve. I still believe in talking with Mr. Latham. Mm-hmm. I believe our emergency category B has been underestimated, and they rolled up some things into category C, which are the work projects that I believe need to go back into category B. So I'll have an update, and we've received a new PDMG. I believe we're on version 6 or 7. Nicole had really done, I think, a good job of pushing some things forward, but she has been reallocated to something else, and so we've got a new one. Have not met with her. Have you talked with
I'm just curious how many did that lay down?
6 or 7.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So we'll continue to work that. Any questions or comments from the court on grants that we covered or any additional grants, grant opportunities you want to discuss? Hearing none, we'll move on to item number 9, which is to consider proposals for RFQ 2025-01 for grant engineering and architectural services. Again, this is in conjunction with DR 4781 in anticipation that there are going to be some work projects that would require engineering services.
Doucette 468, Freeman 439, Wilson 406, Judge.
What was the last one?
Wilson was 406.
Okay, thank you.
That was the third place. Thank you. Doucette was first at 468.
So you said Doucette, Freeman, Wilson?
Yes.
And would you read those off for me one more time? Because I was.
Doucette was 468.
Yes, sir.
Freeman was 439. And Wilson was 406. Okay.
Based off of our scoring sheet criteria and the evaluation of the court, Doucette has the highest score. So I would entertain a motion from the court to accept the qualifications for grant engineering architectural services being awarded to Doucette and authorizing the negotiation of a contract for those services. Motion from Commissioner Basham, second from Commissioner Matthews. Any further discussion concerning item number 9? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it. Motion carries. Item number 10, update on construction projects.
I'm going to defer the first one, if you don't mind, to Commissioner Matthews. We had one little thing that we, when a couple of the judges sat up at the bench, they wanted to be elevated a little bit. So Commissioner Matthews can tell you about the solution that we came up with.
Built some risers, probably 6 inches tall, covered them in carpet, put them in place, dried them out. We're all about, well, the JPs are a little taller than me, but the district's about the same height. And they fit for me. I don't know that the two district judges have been up there yet, but they look good.
Yep,
good. Look good. And then, of course, the office down there in Cove is looking very good. I've been down there 5-6 times now. So it's good. Okay.
All right, Judge, I've got a few things I'd like to discuss. In the last court, we had, I really don't know if I'd call it a financial summary, but we had a discussion about the financials of the overall project and specifically the Leon Street project. And I guess I don't know if we should be proud to say, but this court's gone viral. First time since I've been on the court, the recording was taken off the county clerk's website, which is great, and it was shared out on Facebook. You know, social media, but there certainly were a lot of comments. In fact, on one of the posts, it was shared 26 times. And I know I would have been very excited during my campaign to have a post shared 26 times. So that's a pretty good sharing. So there are a lot of people that listen to this recording. One of the posts specifically said, go to 22 minutes is where the financials were discussed. So I thought a lot about it, and I wasn't, you know, going to react too much until I've received several personal things with the question of how did the county get 25% over budget? I got to thinking about that, and I've been watching this pretty close. And so I think, and I really don't know what the word is, but I could say there was maybe some misrepresentation of the facts or understanding of the facts. And so what I'm going to at least try to do today, and I hope this goes viral too, that so that people can actually listen and maybe share this and some of the information. This is going to be extraordinarily hard to do. And my goal was about 13 minutes, because that's what was spent last time. Because there is a lot of moving parts on this project. Going back over 2.5 years, I've reminded the court folks many times. I mean, it was the second court session I was ever in when it was voted to move forward with the Leon Street Annex. And I abstained from that vote because I didn't have enough information at the time. But I immediately volunteered to work on the construction project along with Commissioner Basham. I think it's important to define a couple of things. Because what I got, and I went back and listened to the recording because I was sitting here live, and I didn't get everything out of it that apparently the public heard, because what the public heard was over budget, 22 change orders, you know, that didn't come through court. This project was defined with a GMP, which is a guaranteed maximum price that is submitted by the CMR, which is the construction manager at risk. Okay. This is the first time I've ever been involved in anything like this. Very different than what many of you maybe have done in your own lives. You either managed a project or built your own house. And so, yes, very rarely do you get a guaranteed maximum price by a home builder. And yes, in every construction project, there are change orders. You want different knobs on your cabinets. You want a different paint color that you thought you had decided, right? So there's going to be certain, you know, change orders. And then last, there's the total construction cost. And I think what got lost in the translation was the difference between what the GMP and what the total construction cost was going to be for this project. So I'm going to try to at least lay out, because there were things like, you know, talked about shell game of moving money around. Again, I tried to 22 change orders. Out of those 22 change orders, there were about 7 of significance. So let's go back to the jail project. The jail project GMP was $4,788,809.56. The GMP came in at $4,963,245.42. The total project cost, which is what is left out many times, which includes many other things other than the GMP. It includes things like land and closing costs, independent testing, surveys, the biggest being architecture and engineering fees, and furniture, fixtures, and equipment. So this all started 2.5 years ago. The jail, the final was presented to the court on April 27th of 2024, which is this document right here that was presented to the court on that date. And it spelled out some other things. And I think the most significant thing that we have to kind of look at is during the construction phase, we realized that we had a huge deficiency in our camera systems in the existing jail. So we had quite a discussion. The sheriff's office was already working on proposals to replace those cameras, but we had the contractor on site that was installing the camera system in the expansion So it made a lot of sense to make it all one system. So this court knowingly passed a $321,005.77 change order. But of course, knowing that that was going to put us under some funding constraints eventually down the road. There were many other change orders during that time, some of them being credits. In fact, change order number 11 was $194,953.04 credit, which came as the buyout and the final split, which, again, when you're talking about a project that had two phases, that money just kind of, it goes back to the ledger, if you will, or you call it. So that was banked money that we had on that project. Although it was an additional cost of $174,435.87 on the GMP, you know, overall the jail project was, you know, came out very well. But remember, we did approve over $300,000 in additional. Because that comes into play later on down the road in phase two. So when I heard that we were $2 million over budget, my eyes kind of, you know, got very wide because I've been tracking these numbers. I will be the first to admit, yes, we were over budget, if you will, on the GMP. But those were all, and I may spend a little time, I'd be glad to go into this at more in depth later on if anybody wants to. Each one of those changes had an explanation, and many of the large ones were discussed and brought to the court. Maybe this specific change order wasn't brought to the court, but they were certainly discussed. So the original GMP on LSA was $8,016,114. We ended up on the GMP at $8,462,309.86. So that is an increase of the $476,000, something like that. What the court probably didn't remember was back when we were doing the jail expansion, it was brought to us that they were buying jail equipment at the time, doors, locks, and all of the security equipment. And so it made sense to go ahead and put that all in one large order, pre-buy the stuff that was going to go into the holding cells. So that was $41,009.34. So the actual change orders that were executed that affected the GMP outside that $41,000, totaled $311,984.49. So that is what I consider the portion that's really over budget, wasn't planned for in the GMP. Change order number one was a $91,000 jail savings credit that we took $91,000 out of the savings out of the jail prior to us getting our $194,000 back and put it towards the Leon Street annex. I will make no bones about it. When we went into this project, we knew it was going to be very, very tight. I was personally involved in the negotiations with the contract manager at risk, and we did cut this thing down to the bones as far as trying to be as utilitarian as we could in this project. The second change order was $60,840.18, which was a retaining wall backfill and a FDC install. Those two we had Roden Bridge did most of the demolition, they did the site work, they did the pad work, and then it came time to do some of the backfill in a kind of tight quarters, and we realized, and this was discussed in court, that our road and bridge guys had big equipment. They, they work on big stuff in roads, and they weren't equipped to do some of the small tight quarters. So we had a contractor on site, and this is the way this works. They're already under contract with the contract manager at risk. And it's actually pretty cool because they have to give a quote to the contract manager at risk. And they're only allowed to mark it up, I believe, 10%. So it's not like they get to run rampant going, oh, change order, we get the... And they have to show their man hours, their burden costs, and everything to the contract manager at risk. So that was unforeseen. And I think Mr. Payton was a part of the FDC where, you know, the original design, and if, I'm sorry, you wrote that, but the original design had it in one spot, which was fine. I mean, technically it worked. But Mr. Baden worked with the architect and said, you know what, with our trucks trying to get in and out of here in this space, we really like our fire department connection out on this spot. There's cost involved with that. But here again, I thought for the safety of the building, you know, based upon the people that are going to have to, you know, do it, we moved that fire department connection. Is that pretty much? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Payton. Sorry. Didn't mean to put you on the spot. The last one, or the other one, was number four, which was $101,329, which was for sidewalk, curb, gutter, finished site grading, which again fell into that site work, dirt work that Road and Bridge did not have the proper equipment to do the actual pretty finished work before all the forms and everything and the concrete was poured. There was a number five was $12,911.67, which was a gas line to the meter. And the video review stations. The video review stations was one that we weren't prepared when we set them up. They were going to have monitors that were going to be in front of the deputies and the bailiffs. And the security team looked at that and said, oh, so the solution was to embed, if you will, the monitors in the desk so they're flat. So the bailiffs and the security team had a line of sight. Again, the first design was fine. It just wasn't the right colored knobs. So we, you know, elected to go on the thing of safety. Let's see, number six was a no-cost change order, number seven was a no-cost change order, number eight was a no-cost change order, number nine was a no-cost change order, number 10 was a no-cost change order. It could be a little misleading when there's no cost. It could have come out of the owner's contingency, it could have come out of the contractor's contingency, if you will, but it's all done, you know, within the contract. So it was something that was within, it might be literally the changing of a color. One of them that I can recall was at the exit of the building, they had sheetrock, which was in the design. Sheetrock was fine. But we got to looking at it going, man, people are going to put their feet on it. They're going to, you know, it's just sheetrock. And so we had them extend the paneling. And by the way, it turned out looking much better as an aesthetic value. But that was just one of those small medic changes that came up as a change order. The last big one was change order number 11, which was $70,395.45. And that was for phase two of the build out of the data room. This was discussed heavily in court about this data room. Originally, it was going to be a server room. But then we realized, one, financially, it was going to be very expensive to make it into a county server room at this time. But from the very beginning of this project, it was decided that was going to be on the county, that the contractor's only function was to build us a functioning room with air conditioning to be able to handle a data room. So in other words, none of the racks or any of the UPSs, anything to operate that was not a part of the construction project or the GMP. So that was 70,000, but we went out and got a quote based from the county, and it was 168,000 and change. That's when we engaged with Butler Cohn, and they agreed, which was not a part of their scope, but to take this on. They went out for bid, and they got it for 70,000. We go back to phase one, which was some racks, basically just the racks being installed. That was $20,000 that really wasn't even a change order. It was just rolled into the GMP. So the total data, if you will, installation that was not under this plan was a total of about $90,000. So we get down to $311,948.49. Oh, I'd be remiss to say that change order number 12 was a $24,520.35 credit back to us based upon the savings split, and also $5,607.38 for we elected not to have them plant as many plants in our landscaping. So you subtract that $24,000, so we come up with $311,948. In my head, I take out that $100,000 basically for the data room, because that was already discussed. The county was going to pay for that. So now we're down to $211,000 in change orders. One of the other things that we've got is back during the jail, we were pretty close to getting to where we were going to open up the jail expansion. And the last thing that you do, basically, is hook up the sewer. Well, we went to hook up the sewer, and they started hooking it up, and the pipe just crumbled. It's an old clay pipe. And so, again, we discussed this in court. The decision was wait. Who knows how long for the city to repair that, because it was a city sewer pipe that was failing. Or to go ahead and contracted out, which we contracted out with a local contractor, and got it done in about a week and a half. But it was at our expense. Commissioner Basham and I, in fact, county attorney was there that night when we went to the city council and pled our case that, we fixed their sewer line for them. They very graciously voted that in and approved to pay us back in this current budget year, and that is $58,810.18. I didn't do the math on that, but you take the 311, take out the 100,000 for the data room, take out another 50,000. So we're certainly not sitting at the 2 million that much of the public thought we were over budget. I would like to define a couple more terms. There is a thing called over budget and underfunded. By the way, I was remiss. And the reason I'm very passionate about this is I'm looking at it here. I had written this down in my office probably a year and a half ago, and I have it up on my thing, and it's Proverbs 18:17. The one who states his case first seems right until the other comes and examines him. And that's very powerful. So that's what I'm doing right now, is I'm examining, what was said. Now, this is where the embarrassing point comes for this court. If I'm into telling, at least what I believe are facts. When we approved the GMP for the Leon Street annex, I have to go back just a little bit more. When we first started this project 2.5 years ago, we learned a lot of lessons in this project, guys. I won't make any bones about we learned lessons. We probably went out and got our financing too early. We financed like $13 million, 700 and something. I mean, it's all. But we based that on some existing numbers. And then when it came time to build the Leon Street Annex, that was right, I guess, after the COVID and the supply chain. And
Mr. Weddle, just so there's no confusion, we misspoke there on the financing.
Yeah.
It was a $7 million bond tax note that we issued.
Correct.
Proceeds from that were $6,659,000.
and some change.
Yes.
You'd said 13 million.
The total that we put in was a little over 13.
Not finance.
Yeah, you are correct.
Yes.
Thank you. We took 7 million from the ARPA funds, added it to the tax note, that we took out. When the GMP was presented, it was also presented with, this construction page, this construction cost. And at that time, the Leon Street Annex was estimated to be at $9,512,532. We knew it. We discussed it. We knew that there was going to be a shortfall in funding. So what happened? Happened was a lot of moving parts, a lot of things. I believe what happened was in this current budget year, we failed to take into account the total construction cost, which included the architecture and engineering fees and the furniture fixtures. And that's where the difference in the money, in my opinion, has come from. Not an overage on the construction cost. It was a miscalculation in our budgeting for it. At the end of the day, it wouldn't change a thing. The cost of the project is the cost of the project. What does change now is how we react as a board and how we handle this and how we do our best abilities to pay our bills, complete this project, learn what we learned. And if I've learned anything, it would have been to overfund if we would. In this case, we probably would have borrowed more money in the tax note to cover those unforeseen. And there's unforeseen costs in a project, and then there's also client-directed cost. I go back to the $327,000 that we spent on a camera system that was directed by us to add to this total cost. I don't know if I really have a summation, but I wanted to at least get out there what I felt is what transpired and what happened. And I will promise you that I learned a lot from this. It was said that there was discussion, and there was, about having a hiring a project manager. But probably what we should have done was hire a financial advisor, somebody to watch over the budget for us, not so much the construction cost. Because where we failed was we lost sight of the total construction cost and got focused on the GMP. So that's my piece. I hope this goes viral. I hope it clears up some of the things, and I'm sure there will be more conversations about this, because later on today, we're going to have to make some moves within our budget in order to pay our bill to the contractors that fulfilled their obligations. Thank you, Jed.
There's a couple of questions that have been submitted through our Zoom platform. The first being that I had stated that there were work orders from the administrative and jail buildings that were not signed by me. Who signed those? I had reached out to Butler Cohen. I had reached out to our architect, and I did not get a response on the change orders from the architect. However, Butler Cohen did in fact submit to me, and we did receive change orders for both the jail expansion as well as the Leon Street Annex. What I received from them were 11 change orders for the jail expansion and 11 for the Leon Street Annex. I signed change order number one for the jail expansion. And the other change orders were either signed by both Commissioner Basham and Commissioner Weddle. I believe there was one that was signed by Commissioner Weddle alone, and there were three that did not have a signature on those. And I have submitted those to Ms. Newton as part of the record from our last meeting. We've had, I've had several entities, news agencies, as well as some of our citizens asking for copies of those, and those have been provided. Why were those not brought before the taxpayers? The contract was discussed as part of the GMP, and it was accepted in a public meeting, as well as our contract with Southwest Architects. So there would not have been necessarily change order by change order to be brought to the taxpayers, but I do believe that in reviewing those copies of change orders should have been presented to the court so that we could visibly see those. There were some that were, and most notably was the very last one, which dealt with phase two of the Leon Street Annex. Okay, and also, do we have the money to pay for the overage? And the answer to that question is yes. What we do not have at this point under the current budget is the capacity to expense those funds. And there is a difference between having funding and having the ability to spend your funding. And right now we are caught in a position of having the ability to expense the funds that we currently have. And then the last question is in reference to how much the architect is making. I believe that number is approximately $1.6 million is what we have paid. I do not know if that is covering all of his reimbursements or just the flat fees, but I believe that number currently is about $1.6 million. Is what we have paid Southwest Architects.
Judge, I don't want this to be a point counterpoint, but it is a question from the public, so I feel like I need to address. I don't believe there was a member on this court that when we took on this project that did not either give us formally or an implied ability to sign those change orders. So, and on here, it actually says, Coryell County, attention, Judge Roger Miller. If you'll look at Butler Combs, they don't even list a person who's going to sign that change order. They understand that there might be multiple people, that would sign those change orders. So and the significant ones, as I laid out earlier, were brought to you. None of the credits ever came up. PCO, possible change order 021, which was for an asphalt deduct of $8,666.70 that Commissioner Basham and I readily signed because that's where the city came back and said they would repair around the curves, and we had that $8,000 built in as our asphalt. So I cannot see running a project with a timeline and a deadline trying to run back every 2 weeks and bring change orders to the court when the ultimate goal was to finish the project and try, of course, to come in under our budgeted amount. The last one, and I'm not defending, but when people hear architects and they hear 1.7 million, they think, oh my gosh, but under that architect's fees is the civil engineer, is the design team that did all the interior. There is a whole bunch of other, most architects don't have all these people on staff. They hire this out as subs, just like our contract manager at Rich. They don't do all the work, they hire subs out. So there were a whole lot of other people that were paid under that architectural fee by Southwest Architects, not by the county. So to think that a architect, that's what they ended up walking away with, that's crazy. There was a ton of other expenses that they incurred due to that.
Well, I've looked into all of this as well. I did miss the last meeting. Apologize, Mr. Plain, but nevertheless, it is a budgeting issue as far as paying the current bills. It's not a cash short, it's a budget short. So just an amendment to the budget to move some money around. I believe wholeheartedly that the court did give, I understand everyone in here signed some kind of bill, but the court did give the two commissioners the ability and the authority to go and oversee this, because as some of you are, I'm sure, aware, as when you get into a construction project, you don't have 2 weeks to wait on something. You got to move on. Otherwise, it just delays the project and that costs me more money. Last but not least, what we did on the GMP and what we borrowed is two different dollar amounts. It's simple. I mean, nobody likes it, but that's a God's honest truth. Anybody can place blame, and I'm just telling you the God's honest truth. So that's all I have on the update of construction projects.
Well, the next question that came in was there implied was there an implied permission to sign where the judge should sign? I'm not going to answer for what a commissioner may have felt, but I did not give, I did not delegate anyone to the, from this court my signature authority.
I think it just takes a member of the court, just to answer the question, it takes a member of the court to sign over you.
Then we have a difference of opinion on what a signature block is. And I'm sure there's some agencies, there's some agencies that can determine that for us. Anything else to cover under construction update?
Oh, one last thing, Judge. You know, I kind of sarcastically said it at the end of the last meeting, and I regret sometimes when I use my sarcasm, and I welcomed you to the project, and you made a comment that you were asked to stay out of this project. And I, for one, never asked you to stay out of this project. If there's another member on this court that asked the judge to stay out of this project, speak now or forever hold your peace. In fact, I have the last communication that you and I had regarding this via text on Wednesday, January 17th at 2:15. The judge, Monday, December 4th of 2023. Judge, we will need the ability to do this. I'm sorry, I got it. Friday, September 22nd of 2023. Do you have the time on Monday to meet with me and Jeff for an update on the LSA parking lot? We could meet at your office at 1:30. I never got a response back on that. And I'm one that, and you could say, oh, I didn't get it or whatever, but I never got a response back on that. The next one, the only communication I had regarding it, because I figured at that point in time, I wasn't going to get a response. Was on Wednesday, January 17th of 2024. Judge Butler Cohen wants to know if we want a formal groundbreaking for the LSA. I'm in favor of one. Are you in? I got no response on that. I don't know what to do after that point. I tried to engage. I never, ever asked you to stay out of this project. I would have welcomed you to come to some of those meetings. I would have welcomed you to come to the open house. But you apparently elected not to.
All right. Anything else to cover under the construction update?
I'm done. Thank you.
I'm done.
All right. Very good. And I'm. Okay. We will move on to item number 11, which is to consider action on items to support construction projects. Any actions that the court wishes to take under support of construction projects?
I'll do this just like I did last time. Mr. Bell, do we need to leave this one open if there's some number 11 consider actions and items to support construction projects? Or will the action coming out of the executive session maybe be discuss and consider a budget amendment number 6? Because we do know it's all about the construction project. Are we okay to?
Budget amendment pay bills is on the agenda.
Okay. I have nothing on consider actions and items to support construction projects.
Is anyone else from the court? Okay, very good. Item number 12. Oh, I apologize. I do want to go back just very quickly and on under item number 10, the renovations and the movement of the tax office over in Copper's Cove should be complete today. They're getting, I believe this afternoon, scheduled a visit from the city of Copper's Cove, their code enforcement. To be able to give us our certificate of occupancy. And Mr. Carruthers should have the Copper's Cove Tax Office and Early Voting Center open and operational tomorrow, regular hours. So thank you to him. And I expressed this in the update. Little summit that Copper's Cove has. I appreciate the city's cooperative effort in being able to get our permits issued and their assistance in getting this project moving along. And thank you for that. Now, moving on, picking up item number 12, which is to consider the fire and emergency medical services agreement with Copper's Cove. That went out in your packet. We did not consider that when we did those in January. There's some language that they specifically had requested be put into their specific because they do provide some additional services above and beyond what the rest of our firefighting agreements entail.
As always, when it comes to agreements and contracts, I read them. And then I sometimes say, what the heck did I just read? Because they're just, you know, why they make these things so crazy. I'll never understand, you know, whereas, furthermore. So really, I always defer, and I keep, Mr. Belt, is this very similar, if not exactly the same agreement we've had in the past?
Yes, it's really very close. The city of Copper's Cove requires some additional language in there that their city attorneys put in their agreement set up, but
nothing to the detriment of the county.
The this has got the EMS and the firefighting agreements in it, so there's two different monies.
Yeah.
But it.
Yeah, 125 and a 105.
105.
Yeah.
Those amounts the same from last year, good?
The EMS number is exactly the same. The firefighting is the number that was budgeted based off of what we budgeted for the fire departments. And so it's consistent with what is in the budget as well as what was adopted by the Fire Chiefs Association.
I make a motion to approve the fire and emergency medical service agreement for first.
We got a motion to approve from Commissioner Matthews, a second from Commissioner Basham. Any further discussion on item number 12? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 13 is to consider bond council agreement with Oreck, Harrington, and Sutcliffe LLP, a resolution as well as an engagement letter went out in your packets for your review. I believe this is at the recommendation of Mr. Belt, who, based off the court's guidance, had sought new bond counsel. Letter of termination went to our previous bond counsel, and an individual posting for the consideration of new bond counsel was part of the notification for this meeting. Ms. Belt, is there anything you'd like to add?
What's our list of Ms. Houston? She's very capable and willing to represent us.
That makes a motion to approve the bond council agreement.
Second.
We got a motion to approve the bond council agreement with from Commissioner Matthews, a second from Commissioner Weddle. Any further discussion concerning item number 13? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 14 is to consider the auditor's annual financial report for FY24. I believe Mr. Wood has provided copies of the financial report to you. And with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Wood.
Judge, it's the our annual report. Wish I could have got it out to you guys a little sooner. I've been working hard to get this completed, but it shows where we ended up. Fiscal year 24 on the expenses and revenue side, all of our funds. Total debt for the start of the year off, or in the year, however you want to get it.
What I accept your giving this to us today. I mean, I know you've been running crazy trying to get everything done, especially with your software system giving your fits.
Yes, sir.
One of the questions I asked Mr. Wood yesterday, because look, we don't have time to sit here, and especially the folks sitting out there to watch us glean through all of this information, you know, and try to maybe ask intelligent questions. But one of the things I asked was, is this report amendable? Can we, so if 2 weeks from now I'm reviewing it and I find something in there that I have a question regarding, he said, absolutely. We can always go back and review and repair, if you will, if there's anything. I don't suspect there to be anything, but that was the question I asked. Of course, we can go back and, I take the time later on to go through this. If I have any questions, I'll let you know. But it seems all in proper order to me. There's no other discussion. I'll make a motion.
Thank you.
Oh, well, let me. I'll make a motion to accept the auditor's annual financial report for FY24.
Got a motion to accept the auditor's report from Commissioner Weddle, a second from Commissioner Basham. Any further discussion on item number 14? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 15 is to discuss and consider budget amendment number 6 for FY 2025. Commissioner Matthews.
Yes, sir. Me and the auditor were working on some stuff, but he was tied up with this. But I will say this, that I was asked to table this until later on in this meeting. Simply because we're going to have to do an amendment, pay the bills.
Second.
Is that a motion to table, Commissioner?
Yes, sir.
Okay, motion to table till later in the meeting from Commissioner Matthews, a second by Commissioner Basham. Any further discussion on item number 15 at this time? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 17 would be to consider the employee handbook. Commissioner Matthews.
I didn't ask for this to be on here. I think it was asked that give the county attorney and HR the opportunity to work through it. And I believe because of time constraints, they haven't had time. I don't know. I didn't ask for
it. I think it stayed on there because you were not here at the last meeting. So we said since you weren't here,
I got you.
We would table that.
Yeah. I think it still needs to be tabled. They just haven't had time because of other schedules to work through some of the removal and things that really don't affect employees per se,
right?
Job hiring and some other, you know, and that's more the legal side. So I guess you table it again. I make a motion to table it again until the county attorney and HR have opportunity to work through the legal aspects of that.
Motion to table by Commissioner Matthews, second by Commissioner Taylor. Any further discussion on item number 17? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 18 would be to consider time clock plus contract.
Yes, I did ask for that, and I'm going to reach out. We do have, it's kind of like an extension to our contract. We have a contract with Time Clock Plus. And we need to either agree to it or not use it, wait till the new software is implemented or purchased or worked through to where we have, you know, the auditor's business, the treasurer's business, and Time Clock all incorporated into one. But the Time Clock Plus folks are wanting an answer. I don't know the actual number of employees that are on the actual system. I think the 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, and then Mr. Latham's bunch at the Road and Bridge. The Sheriff's Department is not on it. I would encourage that we do something for a digital time clock system, because we waste a lot of time and money and using a digital system, but then because of work hours and manpower, that's just general woman power too, sorry, how it's broke out, we have to go back and then do a lot of paperwork. It doesn't calculate holidays. It's got a lot of issues. So we either discontinue it and stick with the paper and work on it with a new program, but it needs, they want an answer. So
license agreement that Randy sent the other day to review, is that software that would be for your office and our office?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's our current software.
Does it have a time keeping component to it?
It does not at this time, But they are
payroll.
Yes, it does the payroll. Yes, sir. But at this time, they don't have the time keeping portion of that. But they are working to get that implemented. And I would assume by this time we
heard that from LGS one time. They were working on a discovery portal for their software as well. That's been 5 or 6 years. We apparently knew it works on it. I did 7 or 8 years ago. We quit them, moved to back to EDOC.
Probably got the increase with you that sure will be handy as far as trying to keep itself more integrated with our payroll.
Yeah.
So I was I've not been listening because we have been working on payroll, but And
they don't at this point in time, right? Isn't that the correct way?
They do not interface with EDOC. I do know that, which I thought they said they were developing one. And I'm not sure that they don't have some that do interface with them, but EDOC and Town Clock does not. So, and I don't know, did you tell them we're out at least a year on the new system?
That's a
ish.
We were told that they should have a time to be just when at the time
by that time. Able to be married. And they told us not to go get a new timekeeping system. They recommended us not getting a new timekeeping system now because if we find one now, it may not interface with theirs in a year. Because they are trying to develop. Yes.
Yeah.
They I mean I'm pretty sure they have a timekeeping system that does interface with them, but they would not give us that information at that point. Just because they are trying to develop one in-house, I believe, is what I got from it.
What I want to understand is, do you think do away with it?
So do you do away with it now? And every department has to go back to manual timekeeping, which is, I mean, right now, Time Clock is not being utilized. It was not set up correctly anyway. So some
you're
departments...
not using it for unpaid.
No, ever. And I'm you're in charge of your department, who may or may not be on it. Justin's in charge of his. I'm in charge of mine. So it's not like I'm even watching that to see whose departments are on it and who's not.
Y'all do a paper list, don't you? We collect
Time Clock.
Yeah.
Problem is you can't adjust the global settings to that affect them all the county.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. X5 and Road and Bridge, it sometimes works 12-hour shift. The law enforcement side, which works a 12-hour shift opposite, oh, not opposite, but different than his, it becomes a...
Because it wasn't set up correctly, I mean, I've told Jennifer, I've told other people to not trust it fully. I mean, to double check if you're saying you took 8 hours off and that's what's coming out of your bank is 8 hours, because it may or may not take 8 hours of sick or vacation or any of that.
But that's what doesn't work, because we... do our leave request and stuff still paper, but we use it as a tool now to
maybe
make sure everybody's there.
Yeah,
make sure they're clocking in on time. We print off, you know, their weekly time cards and sign them. So,
so it's beneficial to your department.
Kind of still, it's about a hybrid. I mean, we just. I mean, you still got to do half digital or half the paper.
I think Rachel's come up with a process to accommodate it, not because it doesn't do everything it's supposed to. But it absolutely, but it does not at this moment.
If we could change the global settings, I think it would save us about 6 labor hours.
But it would basically be like setting up a whole brand new system. So, and if we're going to a new financial system, then I don't know that it's worth doing that in a year, because I don't know how long it took to set it up to begin with. It fell in my lap, messed up already. So.
And it will not interface with EDOC, even federally.
Nothing interfaces with EDOC.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
EDOC half the time doesn't interface with EDOC, so.
Kind
timeframe would we have to have to implement an old paper system back again?
I would believe that if we engage with the Time Clock Plus at this time, they would certainly give us the directives of how to change those goal settings. You inherited a kind of a mess. It was, I think even some of the passwords were protected.
So we know how to change it. Done that, but it's going to be a complete overhaul. You're going to have every single person that's completely in there right now, all time approved. We're going to lose everything. Not necessarily lose it, but it's going to have to be, we've got elected officials that never one time have signed in to check their people's time.
Yeah.
So
or archived or closed after hours.
Right. And they're not even here anymore, those elected officials. So it's going to be a lot of me going through clicking, saying, yeah, it's right or it's wrong, which is to kind of defeats the purpose anyway of elected officials doing that.
I do know that. I don't know.
We got a.
Was it in the last packet? Or was it on this
one? I forwarded several emails to you guys as I was getting them.
At the 5 year, the 1 year.
It's probably 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Probably.
I think.
He likes to send lots of emails and phone calls. So. I can go find it. It'd take me a little bit to dig for it, but.
All right, so to give y'all a little bit of background, is the county adopted this, an electronic timekeeping system at the recommendation of TAC. And that was about 2017. Is that about right?
March.
So, and at that point, because I sat through the meetings and listened to this, but at that point, there was never a concerted effort to get Time Clock Plus to match up with the departments, the accruals. It was, from sitting in the audience standpoint, it was a check-the-block move to cover in the event that our timekeeping was audited by the Department of Labor. So we've paid close to $6,000 a year, $5,000 and some change since that time frame, to have a system that no department that I'm aware of completely utilizes, because it is still very much a paper backup system. We do not pay off of it. It is used in varying degrees. I'm willing to consider a very short-term contract with Time Clock Plus if they were willing to come in, get those things adjusted so that department by department, the accruals for overtime / comp time is accurate, that our leave accruals are accurate, that sick time accumulations are accurate. And I don't know that that's possible. I did reach out to them, going to try to have a phone call with them yesterday. I wasn't able to make that, but I've got, going to line that up and set that up so that, we've got a better idea, because all we have now is a proposal, for a, yearly extension, a 5 year extension, and the way it's configured currently does not meet the county's needs. I have not seen the original contract.
NRE,
I don't have that right here in front of me. I can find out. Let me go to the email the guy and ask him for sure.
Well, no, he asked the question then, well, how much time would he have to go back to paper?
I mean, I'm pretty sure we're coming up on it, because I remember going through this last year and approving it around this time last year.
I think
I thought we only renewed it for a year.
We did.
Yeah.
So that's what we're having.
So it's kind of, kind of up.
And I think the judge had a great point. I mean, it is time to act. And I think we must have the time clock plus people come here, and we need to express our grievances before we sign on for another $6,000. I mean, they may not even know our grievances. They may not even know the shortcomings that, I mean, I'm sure they service other counties, so you know they have to have some of those bugs worked out. Not that we're going to, you know, get them for the long time, but if we're going to spend $6,000, we ought to at least get a product that works for most.
I would assume it's a matter of licensing. You take each department's got a little bit different schedule and policy that you need to be able to do global settings within your department to match your kind of match the county's policy, and then match, like, each department kind of has their own tailored policies and sort of like, you know, schedule,
right,
things like that. Leave accruals, you know, the comp times, things like that. That's what doesn't work for us is the banks.
If there are 12-year-olds that are writing that code right now. So I mean, look, that's all it is. It's writing code and tailoring it to our fleet. Don't know what that cost is until we ask them.
3 years ago, we went in there and changed the global settings and just went across the whole county.
Right.
And,
yeah.
Which luckily, hardly nobody's using it. So.
Was there, I don't know, is there any other options out there?
Yeah,
they're numerous. They're numerous.
So our contract started on July 1st, 2024, approved by the commissioner's court at some point around that time. I assume it was on the June, something other, June 11th agenda, I guess, of 2024. So we approved the July 1st is the what this says. According to the bill they sent us, this contract start date since July 1st, 2024. Time clock plus one time clock drive, San Angelo, Texas.
Yeah, so it's not even that far a drive for them.
From up in the sky on the way, maybe I'm done more on the way home. Go pay them a bit.
I mean, I would prefer that they come talk to us and try to close the order. I mean, if they want the order, they've got to come and convince us that they're worthy.
Okay. You think you could reach out or have Sherry reach out to them and see if they can come in and sit the next?
Worst case scenario, a Zoom. Best case scenario, we actually have a representative. They can sit there and.
But I'm also, I mean, if whatever Mr. Wood decides to do with the financial software, you know, if we do decide to go with the one that we have been looking at, then that's not an option from here on out.
So fair enough.
I mean,
right.
We're making a one-year decision.
Yeah.
Yep.
I will email him and forward his response to the court.
Which part was for you, Rosalind?
I would have to go back and look. I could come up with it really quickly, but.
Well, the main ones is going to be different. It's going to be Road and Bridge and
Sheriff's
Department.
Their
department does not use it. Well, they don't use it. Going to put them on the spot because they are two biggest departments. I didn't know what they had looked in. I thought that would be better for them.
This is
a countywide policy set forth that the county never fulfilled. But here's some of the global setting issues. This court has to come in there and do your clock-in windows and how it rounds and the minutes and things like that. Because I've been signing off on time cards that I brought to this court years ago that we paid a guy here that 39 hours and 45 minutes. And we paid a guy here that 40 hours and 15 minutes. You know, does that go to overtime? Does that go to comp time? And then the system don't. It's settings that need to be addressed. I don't know if it's necessarily even a program issue. It's just policies.
Is there any action the court wishes to take under item number 18?
Well, They can just wait and see if they can come and then have a meeting with us.
You can have a meeting with us. You can come talk to us, don't you?
Is there any action that the court wishes to take under item number 18?
I would say table until the next meeting.
All right, we've got a motion to table item number 18 until the next meeting. And a second from Commissioner Matthews, a second from Commissioner Taylor. Any further discussion under item number 18? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 19 is pay bills. I believe that at this time, we are not able to pay bills as they've been presented. However, we do have an executive session scheduled to consult with the county attorney, and there may be some actions concerning item number 15 as well as item number 19. So without the court needing to take action, item number 19 cannot be executed as presented at this time. So we will move on to item 20, which is reports. Commissioner Matthews?
A couple of things. Generally, in April, we do the Employee Appreciation Day, so that's just something to put on y'all's radar. Number two, I'd like to reiterate the starting of the budget sooner than later and discussion it with problems that we're running into now. And that's it.
Commissioner Weddle.
I'm not going to steal Commissioner Taylor's update on his, but I do, this is kind of interesting. I had the, I guess I'd call it the honor and the privilege at the Lincoln Reagan dinner to sit and have at the dinner table. I had Representative Shelby Slauson, I had Senator Pink Flores, and I had Governor Abbott. Like I said, it was a privilege and an honor that I got to sit at that table. And that's all fine and good, but one of the interesting moments was we kind of at dinner settled in, and I said, can we talk politics for a second? And Shelby and Pete engaged. And I said, hey, there's a couple of bills out there that are very important to our county, which is one the judge here talked about his legislative priority this year, which was reimbursement for 100% disabled veterans. And this is the interesting dynamics that, you know, you think that Shelby and you know, Pete Flores would interact with the governor a lot, but apparently it's not that often. And man, they jumped on it and they were talking about it. And all of a sudden you kind of saw the governor look over like this, and man, Pete saw his chance. So he pitched it. He pitched it hard. I know he's supporting what there's two bills in the Senate and one in the House. I did find out that Hugh Shine dropped it last year. He just probably some thing, but I think they're very committed to try to see this to go through. Then they start talking budget things, because the governor asked a couple of questions, and it was like, you know, and he comes back, nope, the bill's $272 million, there's a 2% threshold, blah, 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 you know what I mean? He was just ripping off stuff, and you kind of see the governor going like this. I don't think the governor's going to make that decision, but it also, I think, helps that when he's in these budget discussions that he doesn't, you know, say, you know, get rid of that. So I thought that was a positive.
Yeah.
It was very cool to kind of see that interaction.
Anything else?
That's it. I'm going to let Mr. Taylor do his.
Commissioner Basham.
April 5th, we got the Coryell County GoTex Scholarship Fundraiser. It's a good time. It's a good organization. They gave a lot of scholarships to our kids in Coryell County. And if y'all can, please attend. Like I said, it's going to be April 5th at the complex. And please pray for rain.
Very good. Commissioner Taylor.
We had the fire department benefit Sunday. It's a good turnout, a little lower than what it was last year, but it was still good turnout. I think everybody left with a full stomach. Pay for it. Bunch of it.
Not at once. No, cut it out over about 4 months.
I'll take it anyway and get it.
Yeah.
I think the dry spot in Coryell County is close to County Line Schoolhouse and Lincoln Lady Pullman. Our roads are dying. They are brown, they are dying. Up the road 3 miles of my house, they're not.
Yeah.
But it rained, it had a little rain a while back, and it rained about twice as much at my house as it did down the county line. The oaks down there, they're brown.
Yeah.
It is dry. It's not a very high fire danger because I got plenty of cows. There ain't a whole lot of fuel load. Unless it gets in cedar trees. Yeah, I've done my best to annihilate as well. So they're going to have a hard time. Let's Fort Hood catches on fire.
Oh, I got the market on cedar trees.
Okay, Kevin, Mr. Taylor, anything else?
No.
Okay. I'd echo, attended Jonesboro's fundraiser. I think y'all would have had a better turnout had Reverend Dossie not held the congregation quite as long as he did. Thought there should have been a little bit more of a cooperative effort on his part, and I will let Reverend Dossie know my displeasure at keeping the congregation as long as he did. Rumor has it he did not preach last week, and he felt compelled to make up for that this week. I don't know if that's but I thought it was a good event. Yeah. Last week we had another KARST, our regional habitat conservation plan update. It's a good meeting. They're making quite a bit of progress. We are wrapping up phase three, so we'll have another payment due for that phase, and we're getting into the beginning with phase four, which will start developing the cost analysis of those little endangered or potentially endangered species, and we'll have a little bit better insight. I believe there are currently 12 species, 10 or 12 species that are listed. I'll forward that draft out to y'all so you can see. That does not mean that in our final version of this, all of those species are covered. It's kind of a moving target. The previous administration at the federal government was very adamant about protecting certain species. Without quoting Fish and Wildlife, I believe there's a little bit more leniency. And then also there's still some discussions going on about what percentage do we allocate for the take permits. And you can read about that in the report itself. But it is making progress. We are on timeline. The Hill Country Transit District has completed reorganization. So there are now just four counties in Hill Country Transit District. That is Milam County, Bell County, Lampasas County, and Coryell County. And they're currently in the process of switching to a micro system in the rurals. So basically what that means to our constituents is where we used to have fewer assets, we will have more assets to the county, and as well as immediate response instead of having to schedule things, you know, days in advance. They're also running a fixed route within the city of Gatesville. I'm not sure exactly what those two points are, but I believe it's something to along the lines of the senior center to Walmart back. And there is also a fixed commuter route between the city of Gatesville and the city of Temple, so that those that are needing to make it to Baylor Scott and White or the VA or any of those appointments over there, there's a fixed route. And the pricing for that is very, very minimal. So that's a good news story from Hill Country Transit. And I appreciate all the things that they've done to maintain public transportation in the rurals as well as the urban areas. That's all I have for my update. We do have two items in closed meeting. So pursuant to Texas Government Code Section 551.071, the Commissioner's Court will conduct a closed meeting to consult with the county attorney regarding pending litigation and a matter subject to attorney-client confidentiality to include, but not limited to, that case of Creole County versus Purdue Pharma et al. In the 152nd District Court of Harris County, as well as pursuant to Texas Government Code Section 551.072, the Commissioner's Court will conduct a closed meeting to conduct deliberations regarding the purchase, exchange, lease, or value of real property. Again, there are potentially two items, one specifically, paying of bills, that will be addressed coming out of the closed meeting. So with that, I've got 10:50. We will reconvene in closed meeting in the front conference room at 11 a.m. We are in recess.
He said, you know, well, somebody started it.
Okay, I've got 1:34. We'll reconvene in open session, picking up with a couple of items that we had tabled previously in the earlier meeting. picking up with item number 15, which is discuss and consider budget amendment number 6 for FY 2025. Think the most, well, the first part of that is we're looking for approximately $600,000. And I think the first part of that could be covered out of the grant support fund. I believe there's $300,000 that would be available from an expense side of things. And then I am at a...
It's going to be like two.
Yeah.
What fund number is that?
It's 70...
71. Okay. 71.
So we currently have obligations in the professional fees with the grant we're working on, the RCP, the MRB.
So two.
So totally agreeing that.
So we're looking at two there. Okay.
I mean, you could probably dip some out of there, but it wouldn't take it all.
Beyond that, I'm open to suggestions.
I would take 200 out of the grant support fund, 400 out of prison board. Every year, 600,000.
I'm pretty confident that we can't take 400 from the prison board. Sheriff could give us.
Well, yeah, I'm not. Yeah, maybe you're splitting hairs, but I've already talked to the sheriff. He doesn't like it, but he understands. But thank and ask you.
Even though we don't ever want to go there, isn't our attorney advise us that we really don't have to, and we can do it, but it's just best to ask.
Sheriff's fund, when sheriff understands the Bobby about it the other day. We just have to go and talk probably I don't know and tell me who we talk to. We talked to somebody about it, obviously.
just no matter where we're at on the prisoner board. Mm-hmm. We obviously have an obligation that has our privilege. We'll rattle it through today's date.
And I think we need to look at that as a whole, because we are over the projected budget amount for inmate food.
You sent out a year to date at some point.
Yeah, I printed one off this morning.
You got one up there this morning.
The current balance in the prisoner board is $1.792 million. So they've got a pretty good balance left in there. 33.6% for the year. And the jail is running 39.4%. As a whole.
That's what the government is voting for, this being for through March. Okay.
6 months worth.
Right.
And
we're running it right at 40%.
33%. Yeah.
Overall, the jail is only there 40%.
Yeah, overall, they're 39.4. So.
So we spent $900,000 of county board so far. Is that right? You said there was 1.8 left.
Yeah, there's 740 year to date, so $741,000 with $166,000 encumbrance. About
$900,000. Okay. So spend another $900,000 for the next 6 months, that'd be 1.8, which would leave $900,000. So if we move $400,000, we still ought to be, unless something just drastically changes, way under.
One of the things we need to keep in mind, we did have the sheriff last year in the budget, what money was left over, and then we try to get some cars. I mean, it's the single best touching it. Now that was filling.
Yeah,
we
got enough to cover several cars.
Yeah. Actually, again, okay, mind what you did to tell me that last year.
You got another pot?
I don't know. I get no cars. I might as well just forget about that.
You got another pot of money you'd like to pull it out of their back?
Not worried about my money.
I'm always up for that little sacrificial lamb.
Yeah.
Sure.
It'd be easier just put it all on one.
I think that's a pretty good avenue of attack right there. In my opinion.
Open after the discussion. I'm pretty good with that solution. Not happy, but I'm good with it.
Yeah, that deal with that big problems. But yeah, I mean.
Not yet, but I can create one.
Make motion to use 200K from the grant support fund and 400 from the prison.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Trying to get confirmation from the sheriff that he did agree to the $400,000. When Mr. Carruthers gave up his funding, he gave it. It was in writing.
Yeah, we're waiting on that. I've received today's agenda. I've received an email back from Miss Boyd, who is our Langford person on our grant stuff, and she has worked with that gentleman that was set before that was copied on the email from Mark, I believe his name, and said that she was very pleased with y'all's decision to go with them. She worked with him before, and that she thought very highly of him, and just going to pass that along. She was happy with y'all's decision.
No, I mean, they look like a good outfit. I mean, they had a really good resume.
She's worked for that. He was the one that, you know, of course, their office manager, I'm sure, is the one that was sending me the stuff, but that's who she copied on all of the communications was. David Clark, I'm sorry. He's pretty close to Mark.
Thank Mark. Mark. You don't know
him? Yeah. But yeah, David Clark, they said that she was here. And that's it was copied on those emails. So she was happy.
Mm-hmm. It made somebody happy.
Hey, we'll make everybody happy. You know, we'll make somebody happy, right? I'm not even going to know what's that.
Okay, I got confirmation from the sheriff. So I do believe that statutorily we can execute that. The motion was to for budget amendment 6 to transfer $200,000 from the grant support fund to the capital improvement fund, and $400,000 from the prisoner board line item to the capital improvement fund. Is that correct?
That is correct.
That was by Commissioner Matthews, and the second came from Commissioner Taylor.
There's two expense items under Fund 71, contract services and professional fees, which of those we all to adjust.
The professional fees.
That's 200,000.
Because the contract services is the what we're paying some of our vendors out of right now.
Correct. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Contract services has 200,000 budget. Professional fees has 100,000 on the budget. I don't know which one we're paying.
Currently, we're paying out of professional fees.
Okay.
With the one that has 100,000 budget. So it would be the contract service.
Contract services.
Yeah. Okay. Kind of count on it. Okay, so everybody clear on what we're voting on? Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Mm-hmm. Ayes have it, motion carries. Which then brings us to item number 19, which is to pay bills. We've had bills presented in the amount of $2,134,047.20. Motion to pay bills from Commissioner Matthews, second from Commissioner Taylor. Any further discussion on item number 19? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. As you're leaving the court today, I would ask that you stop by, see Ms. Newton for some signatures on minutes and resolution. That concludes the business of the court today. We stand adjourned. Thank you.